Part 4. Folder 89. January to April, 1981. 89-11. January 3rd, 1981. The incident of the pink light and the info about Chrissy differed from normal daily reality only in this regard. I was consciously aware of it. We must subliminally pick it up, like my engramming on the fish teeth necklace. Evolution-wise, we must be like the apes in 2001. We are on the lip edge of evolving to where we'll see Valis, the plasmate. It's like close encounters at the end. A life form, sacred and beautiful, right here. An information life form. It is what it says. It doesn't have logos. It is logos. Its body is its own information. There. This is why it takes the form of physical arrangements into info. This life form is that. Damn it, it's a life form that doesn't use info. It is info. Note. Given Dick's leap into what he calls meta-abstraction, it is perhaps predictable that he would imagine a life form that, rather than embodying information in a substrate, is pure information itself. The conceptual trajectory he traces here grew steadily in Western scientific culture from the 1930s to the 1990s, drawing in genetics, DNA as the information carrier, and the Book of Life information theory, where information is treated as a dimensionless probability distribution, computational theory, where the computer hardware is often treated abstractly as an ideational form rather than a physically present device, and a host of other fields. Writing in 1981, Dick did not live to see the counter-movement toward embodiment that took place in the late 1990s among scientists and philosophers grappling with information, biology, and systems theory. At the same time, Dick himself insisted on the sensory immediacy of his experiences in 2374. He may have thought he glimpsed a life form that was pure information, but he himself was keenly aware of the embodied nature of his own thought. NKH. End note. Time turns literally to space, both another fourth spatial dimension, but we see this imperfectly as augmented 3D space. This is why the past doesn't perish in the MMSK. Why, when something goes into it, is incorporated into it, it is permanent. The past is still there. This is the essence of the MMSK, to preserve the past, as what I call reticulated phylogons. The MMSK exists in four spatial dimensions and is physically right here. Our 3D world is it, imperfectly seen. Hence, we can't discriminate, live info, set to ground. The next step in human evolution will gain this, as it were, ultra-parallaxis, as we previously added color. My God, the truth, true explanation is quite simple. I saw in 4D and saw a living info life form here. Why, it extends along the temporal axis as a spatial axis. Hence, my Bible into hologram in Divine Invasion. And seeing King Felix. The various physical depth levels in tiers, time as space. This is more than religion, and more than science, e.g. physics, and more than epistemology. Yet all of them. It has to do with human evolution, i.e. the human percept system. This evolution was visually symbolized in my dreams by the third or Ajna eye. It sees time as space. So it started as a cognitive leap, leading to a percept system leap. The meta-abstracting began it in 274. And that led to the phosphine graphics, my first vision of the fourth spatial axis, or my third eye coming on. I was seeing back through the ages when I saw the phosphine graphics. In Ubik, I theoretically postulated that each eidos contains all its previous four manifestations, which Patrice pointed out was a major philosophical breakthrough. Like I say, I am in a world where other people still say one apple plus one apple equals two apples, and I say one plus one equals two. My meta-abstracting caused meta-perception at once. Well, very soon, the third eye organ came on. Repeat. There is no theory, account, or explanation of this in antiquity. This is a new evolutionary leap in 1. Metacognition, followed by 2. Metaperception of world. Valis, alas, is told from a two-eyed standpoint about a three-eyed reality. Christ the Logos invading the plasmate, Valis, transubstantiation, etc., are all two-eyed terms dealing with a three-eyed reality. Someone else will later have to figure out what happened, but I got the clues from reading over the first half of Valis tonight. Where I have been right is, to have treated 2374 as titanically important and to have toiled for almost 7 years to figure out what the fuck happened and, as a result, what it was I saw. My big breakthrough was on October 80, when I realized about the cognitive meta-abstracting of spatiotemporality. Only then did I begin to get it, as I can fathom now, today, at last. But the clues are there in Valis, which is a case history of the next evolutionary step in thinking, perceiving. God damn it, it is the eye of the God denied us. It opened for me, as it did for the Buddha. But I give, at least as of today, an adequate, i.e. contemporary, explanation. It is the Dibbakaku experience. It did happen to Gautama. This is waking up, enlightenment. Transtemporal equals trans fourth spatial. I should not have written religious and occult stuff into Valis. That's two-eyed thinking about a three-eyed experience. However, Plato did help critically with his anamnesis theory, because my third eye scoped out the past. I falsely believed that the explanation lay in the past. I knew the world of 2,000 years ago was involved. It was, as what I saw spatially. But the answer is not in the past, but rather concerns the past. Valis not only, one, lacks this, the correct explanation, but more, two, is cluttered with specious speculating. Oh well, there is enough correct reportage to make it of some use to future evolved humans. Question. Okay, what did you do? Answer. Meta-abstracted regarding spatiotemporal sets. And as a result? The Ajna eye came on, and as a result, I meta-perceived along four spatial axes. And as a result, what did you see along these four spatial axes? 1. Something we see partially, the MMSK. And 2. Something we don't see at all, a living info life form, Valis, the plasmate. And what does this add up to? A quantum evolutionary leap in cognition and way of being in the world, both in terms of cognition, comprehension about reality, and perception, literally, of that reality. Plato and Buddha, e.g., were possibly onto this as an experience, anamnesis and, but did not understand what it signified. Finally, this untangling after 7 years of work goes directly back to the grueling labors circa 1080, when I really bore down. The Logos is pointed to, but new language will have to be developed. Maybe we can work it out in cooperation with the Logos, the info life form that I saw that is here. I understand. The Logos, i.e. the plasmate, hence Valis, is a life form that already lives in 4D space, just as we live in 3D space. Therefore, it is a more evolved life form than us. It isn't just living info. No, it also lives, hence moves, in full 4D space. It's there already, and adapted to that environment. It is a life form more sophisticated than us. From our imperfect 3D view, it is camouflaged from our perception. Is it possible that this augmented depth perception, perception of four spatial axes, is due to bilateral hemispheric parity, or even to right hemisphere dominance. After all, it is the right hemisphere that apprehends space. Perhaps my right brain hemisphere became conscious. This is the next step in human evolution, for the right hemisphere to come on. And to think it never occurred to me all these years that when I looked at the contents of tears and saw the text at several spatial levels, each successive one according to how old it was, I was seeing time as space, which means that I had converted time into space according to the quote from Parsifal. You see, here time turns into space. Thus, if one wanted to, one could set up a cipher system by which a message could be read off at a glance, as set to ground. In other words, in terms of spatial depth along this fourth spatial axis. But whether it is cipher or just the normal way the plasmate operates, I have no idea. It may not be cipher at all, but just its MO. The message lodges in a context that is not the same age as it. In other words, set and ground lie at different depths along the fourth spatial axis. Apparently, the percipient does not need to know the age of the different texts in order to see them lying at different depths. They will lie at their appropriate depths according to their intrinsic age, not according to the percipient's knowledge. This is the case because they actually are at these different depths. When time, age is converted into space. If this is so, it is quite extraordinary. Perhaps the most so of anything I've come across in this experience and exegesis of the experience. For example, a percipient who is able to see time as space, the fourth spatial axis, will see the word Asher on the Linda Ronstadt albums as lying very deep, since it is an ancient Hebrew word. So a message can be put together involving it as a linking device. For example, when I looked up that page in tears, I saw the word Felix at a different depth from the words surrounding it, and this was before I knew that it is a Latin word as well as a name. I did not estimate the depth by the age. I estimated the age by the depth, by the various different depths. In my opinion, someone or something is using this mechanism as a message carrier. What I have been calling the axe lens grid is in fact the appearance in me of the ability to see time as space, hence age as depth. I stood in the antechamber of a world that is already long inhabited and well utilized. This is momentous, since the verbal integer, morpheme, sets its own depth independent of the particular knowledge of the percipient. The enciphering, deciphering, encoding, and then extraction is spontaneous. Asher can be used, for example, to show where a message begins. It can be linked and relinked with morphemes of other ages greater than that of the inferior bulk text. What it is linked to need not be the same age as it, but only a different age from the inferior bulk text. The fact that I was used as an unwitting medium to generate and hence transmit such material shows an instance of how this is done. The older, deeper material in tears came to me in the form of a dream with the urgent sense that I had to enter it into the text of tears exactly as I had seen it. Only years later did I see it lying farther down, i.e., at a greater depth, and then I realized that it was older, hence lower, than the rest of the text of the novel. This material linked itself with the Latin word Felix, which I had thought of as being only a name. I believe I counted four different depths in the total text of tears. A single morpheme will do it. Asher will be perfect, since it is of enormous antiquity depth. And it's on every Ronstadt album, starting with Heart Like a Wheel. We are talking about literally millions of instances, printouts, and many linkings. This message traffic uses a system that springs normally almost automatically into existence, given the nature of the fourth axis perception, time as space. So the method is not ingenious. But the real question remains, who is sending and to whom and what are they saying? 89.29. Vallis picks up where Scanner left off. The traces of heavy metal in drugs that caused the occlusion that I noted in scanner now appear in Vallis as the iron metal spear tip that wounded Christ. And the occlusion that is the topic in scanner is the topic of Vallis, but now it is an ontological cosmic occlusion, insane creator and irrational creation. The cure remedy is salvation through Christ, who, it is stipulated, represents the principle of rationality. He breaks into the universe, heals it and us, as an antidote and invisibly transubstantiates the universe into his own body. Yet, paradoxically, Christ himself has been wounded by the black iron prison, the empire. Through its spear, as he is physician and savior to us, we ourselves flock to destroy the empire and heal our own savior. Salvador Salvandus. Scanner is my true paradise lost, the story of the fall, and Vallis, paradise regained, the story of the restoration through Christ. Hence, Vallis can only be truly understood if scanner is taken into account. Bob Arctor, on the last page of scanner, is horse lover fat on the first page of Vallis. The two novels form a seamless whole. 1. Scanner. Man's fall into occlusion, ignorance, impairment, and enslavement. Here he, the man, splits into two halves. He is self-estranged. He is wounded. 2. Vallis. Man's restoration through Christ, who brings him the saving gnosis that in effect he has lost, been deprived of. Here he, the man, fuses back together as one intact person. The wound has healed. He now recognizes himself as himself. The saving knowledge, gnosis, takes the form of man's ability to identify a picture of himself as himself. Mein eigenes Gesicht, or mein eigenes Gestalt. Note. German. My own face. My own form. End note. Thus, topologically, the universe that in scanner was pulled through infinity, reversing the Gestalt, and making it unfamiliar, i.e. fremd, has been reversed once more, and is its familiar self. Nicht, fremd, but rather heimlich. The Gnostic categories of estrangement and alienation versus returning to one's home, the familiar, apply here. One has come to oneself after the fall in scanner. 89.103. It is very, very important to realize that in tears, two distinct selves in me were writing two parallel but unconnected narratives. One, the overt, explicated political one about forced labor camps, and a U.S. ruled by five police marshals, the Poles and Nats. And, two, a latent religious narrative about Christ and Rome and St. Paul and agape. Now, in 2374, these two selves, as, so to speak, thesis and antithesis, ignited into one single ultrasynthesis, in which the apparently conflicting elements that divided them off from each other were fused in a totally new, vast vision of history, society, God, freedom, tyranny, that constituted a revelation to each self. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts, but more, this meant psychological integration for me, individuation in Jung's sense, wholeness, etc., and an end to internal conflict. This synthesis combined revolutionary political activism of a Marxist type with a form of Christianity unknown to me, apocalyptic millenarianism of a Jewish messianic nature, involving a Zoroastrian dialectic, much as the Essenes believed in. My primary vision was of a conflict constant in history found, e.g., in the Book of Daniel, in which an enslaved people fight against a tyrannical empire to establish a just kingdom under messianic rule. Upon grasping this conception of history, I resolved my inner conflicts by this, a higher organizing principle or structure that subsumed all parts of me. This all-embracing conception of history, society, man, and the dialectic I put forth in Vallis, so that Vallas is simultaneously a religious and a political novel. Technically, it presents the view of active millenarianism. We must act politically to establish the messianic kingdom. It will not come on its own. So Vallas is both a broad overview and a call for positive political action, essentially revolutionary. This does not in any way involve an about-face in my political stance, i.e., that which I inherited from Berkeley. It simply fuses it with my metaphysical, religious, epistemological, philosophical views. Note, epistemological. All my years of epistemological preoccupation are involved in the synthesis, viz., I find that Christian apocalyptic history is the true hidden essence of reality, which of course brings in the messianic salvific mission of Jesus Christ and ultimately God. Thus, all areas of my worldview are involved and integrated in this synthesis. The political element has religious implications. The religious element has epistemological implications. There are exceedingly profound historical implications, since it is in history that all this is played out. But until yesterday, when I reread Vallas once again, I failed to notice just how political a book it is. All my thinking has been philosophical and theological. The political part just seemed to happen. For one thing, it was always there. What is new is the religious mystical part. Also, until Reagan got in office, the political part seemed merely theoretical. But now, suddenly, it seems immediate and vital. Suddenly, Vallas and the vision presented in Vallas is politically relevant, as if overnight so. This simply is because the empire is back and stronger and worse than ever. The timing of the book is really extraordinary. 89-105 Stoned Insight. I assimilated my theology, metaphysics, epistemology, and philosophy to my political beliefs. They are all changed, but the political beliefs remain the same. They ratify my political beliefs. They give it cosmic timeless scope. It is validated by and issues from divine authority. Vallas is a fusion of the political theme of tears, the religious theme of Deus Ire, and the street patois and split personality and dope themes of Scanner. It logically follows the three previous novels. 1. Politics. 2. Religion. And 3. Philosophy. 4. My actual life in the street. All fused together in Vallas. And other aspects. Death and loss. Friends. So, I am right. 2374 represented a flash in which the independent areas of my thinking fused into one great new synthesis in which everything I had thought before was subsumed beneath a vision of God. Vallas is composed of 1. My 10-volume meta-novel, 2. Politics, 3. Religion, 4. My actual life, 5. History, all fused together into a total vision that is a structure emanating out of the mutual exchange of between among these five elements up to then existing independent of one another in my mind.